Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. We're gonna play on and stand strong with Jolo and Dibs. Turn the game on. Pump up the volume. It's time to play ball. Jolo and Dibs. Turn the game on.
I'll take it. I'll take it. A 6-5 loss that features a grand slam. I'll take that.
Look at you starting the day.
Look, I'm not going to come in and celebrate defeats, mind you, but if you're going to lose, lose like that. Put some runs on the board, give the people some excitement, some drama, let them get their money's worth, and if it doesn't break for you that day, it's not the end of the world, but a 6-5 loss with a Pillar Grand Slam, I'll take it.
Excitement all over the board. Tyler Austin getting it in, his first hit. As a Giant, recently acquired, the Connor Joe era has come to a slow and inexorable conclusion.
Me. I just purchased my Connor Joe 63.
I knew you would. I knew. You may have to trade that in for a Tyler Austin 81. I have to check his number. But
I'm glad that you brought that up. And I'm glad that Coz brought it up as well. Coz, welcome back. Great to have you again.
By the way, do any of you lately? Yeah, do any of you like to do this show? I just show up now because I assume one of you is going to not show up. That's all I do.
I thought you were going to do updates yesterday.
Someone will always be out. We wanted to start the show on a, I don't know if it's a celebratory note, but we want to be able to pay respect. This show is, for lack of a better way to phrase it, above other shows. We don't go down into the mud and the muck. We don't mock. We don't take pleasure in failure. We sit here and we try to live in the present and honor the great moments. And Connor Joe, while his time with us was short, we have put together a highlight package to say thank you to Connor Joe for all the great moments.
Into left field. And a base hit! Get that baseball.
He's been grinding for this one.
And there it is. Wow. There it is, the Connor Joe era in a nutshell. We found the highlight. It was the one hit, but it was a great hit. It got people excited. Shout out NBC Sports Bay Area for the audio.
Yes, thank you. And I'm surprised that we didn't also, and I'm going to rip the producer during the break, for not including his opening day walk that he coaxed. It was the only walk the Giants drew that day.
It's only a four-hour show.
It's a great AB. That definitely should be in there.
Hey, man, Dwayne was excited on that, too. So you know it was a big deal.
Huge.
Joe, Jim Cozumore and Dibs here on 95.7 The Game. It is great to have you with us on this Tuesday. Your guest lineup is as follows. Greg Pop at 8:30. Every Tuesday and Thursday at 8:30 for Papa. He'll join us today, obviously, at 8:30. George Karl, 2013 NBA Coach of the Year, former HC of your Golden State Warriors. He's at 9:10. Matt Barrows to talk Niners and the draft at 9:35. And a reminder, today and tomorrow, your final 2 days to qualify for the Golden Ticket. Not one, but two tickets to every single Warriors home playoff game. Those opportunities begin at 7:25 with a text to the Chilton Auto Body text line at 95795, at 7:30 with a tweet to the at 957 The Game handle, and at 7:35 to our contest line, which I will read off at that time. We begin with the Giants coming up just short against the San Diego Padres yesterday by a final score of 6-5. The Giants have now dropped 5 of 6. They are 1-4 against the Padres this season. Had a 5-0 lead. Had a 5-0 lead with Bumgarner on the mound. You had to figure this was an opportunity to break through, but all for naught. Bumgarner let it get away from him. Tatis hit him up for a shot. He beans Tatis later. It starts to unravel. Maranta comes in, can't get him out of a jam. And before you know it, Giants fall 6-5.
Yeah, you get San Diego able to peck away and get a couple and then another one, and then you get the big inning that undoes it. And it's Maranta again with his fingerprints on it, and you hate to see that for a guy who had so much promise coming into the year, and he's had a couple of tough outings in relief back-to-back. Joe, I don't help but wonder what happens with Madison Bumgarner in these starts, because Bochy allowed him to go out there for the seventh inning. He faced a battery. I believe he beans Tatis, and then Boach goes out there.
You have to wonder the rationale behind beating
Tatis.
And
you have to wonder how much longer this goes on where he's able to go out there and go a third time through the order. And doesn't this put them at cross purposes going forward? Because the new way of thinking, Farhan Zaidi, is you don't let your pitcher go out there a third time. But the old school mentality is, I'll say it, he's a horse. So
right. How
do these things relate to not only Bumgarner's present, but also his future?
I know that if you go by that theory, you don't want to get your pitcher, your starting pitcher, in through a third time of the order, that's fine. If you want to start that now, that's fine. Madison Bumgarner has earned the right to go out there as long as he wants. Same way, if they're playing interleague ball, Madison Bumgarner has earned the right to tell Boach, I want to swing the bat. Don't go with the DH on this particular day. He's just different. You carry three rings, you bring in your jewelry, you got your chips, you get a different rule than the new guys coming up. You want to set the rule with them? Set the rule with them.
Well, you don't set the rule, and then you end up with a loss. So it's interesting to see when it goes against you and you've got a guy who's more analytically driven at the top. Does the change come this year, or like you're saying, do you just ride it out with the old school mentality with an old school guy?
Do you think Zaidi then looks at Bumgarner and said, see? Listen to what this is. What I told you this beforehand. I'll let you do it your way.
That's not going to work. I don't think Bumgarner comes across as an analytical guy who's going to be interested in seeing data points talk to him coming out of games when he did what he did in Game 7 against Kansas City, right? Like, you'll go back to that memory and go, if I was able to pull that off, your data probably pointed to the fact that I shouldn't have been in that game. And
right.
yet, how do you explain it? Because I lived it. So that would be one thing, but that's an excellent point, Dibs, because from now until the trade deadline, that's going to be the story you want to watch. On one hand, you have a GM in Farhan Zaidi that's made it very clear. Boach is making the decisions. Boach is going to handle it. It's the final year. I'm not really going to get involved with that. I'll handle transactions. And we've all had that guy in our fantasy baseball league. I mean, damn, he is quite active. The league office is probably like, again, Giants?
I might have something that's come over the phone already. I think yesterday when we were getting off the air, we had something that came across the phone.
Right? I think
Connor Joe, Tyler Austin.
Yeah, Tyler Austin.
There
I think
you go.
Farhan gets paid by the transaction. He has a base salary, and then it's, you know, maybe $10,000 per move. So he's out there just slinging and trading on the 40 man.
So he's making those deals, and Boach is going to handle the team in the dugout. That's probably the trade-off, considering it's Boach's last year. But as you get towards the trade deadline, you're going to find yourself in a situation where you can't separate church and state any longer. You can't. You're not going to be able to have a scenario where, well, we'll let Boach keep him out there because he wants to manage him in an old school way. But if he leaves him out there and he gets shelled and he gives up runs, the trade value will slowly decrease. And that's where it falls into Zaidi's purview. That's where he's got to make the decision. So that's going to be obviously a very compelling storyline between now and the deadline.
That's a good struggle, too.
Joey Bart hit a home run last night. Three-run shot, top of the first.
Everybody.
Bring him up.
No.
It's not even hitting season in the Cal League yet. Wait till it gets good and hot down there in that Central Valley. You get out to Motown, Jimmy. It's about 102 in July.
I love it.
That ball will fly.
I love it.
Did you do you like the fact that they've bumped up these start times now to 6:45? No longer starting at 7:05 or later this season. Now, not Friday, not the weekend, don't worry, but Monday through Thursday, excluding day games, they're going to start at 6:45.
Yep.
They're getting a little bit of an early head start. You enjoy that?
It's an adjustment, Jim. I have to make the adjustment. I don't love it just initially because 7:05 is so singed in your brain. I'll get used to it, and as a guy who likes to get to bed early, it actually probably fits me, but it's an adjustment, Jim.
It's an adjustment, but I like it. I like the fact that they start early. I'd like them to start early and play faster. Those are the things I'd like to see them do. But I like
good luck on number two.
Yeah, I know.
3-hour game last night, 11 runs. That's pretty darn good.
Not bad.
If you could get 11 runs every game in 3 hours, you would love it as a baseball fan.
I would like the first number to be a two.
Two runs?
Nope. The first number on the hours. Instead of 3 hours, I'd go 240 something. I'm happy camper.
It was 255 last
night.
Then
so I'll take it.
I mean, does that make you happy enough?
He's okay with it. The previous criteria
that,
you laid out, he wasn't okay with it.
No, I wouldn't have.
Once you gave him an accurate representation, he was more inclined to enjoy the experience.
How long can we see fake news coming out of you, too? I mean, you're just randomly throwing hours out there, 3 hours.
I rounded up, Jim. 8 minutes at a baseball game or 15 minutes at the Baybridge Toll Plaza? Which one's more enjoyable?
Let me tell you, I was just out there.
I know. That's why I bring it up.
I was going to get out of my car and start swinging with somebody. It was just, you just sit there in the toll plaza.
Bart, and you're there, kid. Bart, and you're
there. High. Bart, and you're high, or you're getting stabbed.
And you're still there, bro. You still make it.
We can focus on Bart, Joey Bart, Bart Simpson, Mount Bartmore, all that good stuff.
Or caramba.
We could at least try to get to a point where there was one positive moment, one big positive moment from last night's game.
Falling behind 2-0. to Pilar.
It's a big pitch. He can absolutely zone in on a speed, on a location, and get very specific of what he's looking for. Because Lauer has to get in that strike zone.
High drive! Left field! It is out of here! Like you said, he had to come in.
Kevin Pillar's first career Grand Slam, which gave the Giants a 6-5 lead. Does anyone know who hit the last Grand Slam for the San Francisco Giants? And does anyone happen to know when that was? Roughly. I'm not going to hold you to the exact
Willie
minute.
McCovey, 1980.
You don't have to go that far back. Okay. You're going to go back almost 2 years to the day. It was Brandon Belt hitting a Grand Slam. How do I not have this in front of me? I have a singular page of Giants notes today. April 7th, 2017, he hit a Grand Slam in a game that they played against the San Diego Padres and lost 7-6.
Wow. He
hit two home runs that game.
That's a perfect come around, right?
So almost the exact same thing years later. It's the same opponent, almost the same date, get a Grand Slam. So causation versus correlation, when the Giants hit Grand Slams, they lose.
Yes, and hopefully that season...
So we're rooting against Grand Slams.
And this season hopefully ends better than that season ended, which 2017 was also a disaster.
I disagree.
I'm not exactly trending in the right direction.
I know. I think it's the perfect finish. You had a little excitement for your team. You got a chance to get excited and see your guys. You end up helping yourself because we're all on the lose to get better. Can't train. Are we all there this year with the Giants?
The tanking?
The tank. I hate using that term, but I'll use it. Tank. We're all in the tank.
I'm
the
on
Giants.
The get out on time train. And
you're late.
Your train's way
you're late
here.
Already.
Train's way late. We got to get out of here. All right. So The Athletic has this NBA piece that comes out yesterday. There's like 50 nuggets in there we can talk about today. We'll start with the one that ranks, according to the players, the most overrated player in the NBA, and he resides here in the Bay Area, according to the players. We'll have that for you next here on Joe, Coz and Dibs, 95.7 The Game.
Joe Low and Dibs continues on 95.7 The Game.
Fantastic article on The Athletic today, courtesy of Sam Amick, but it's a collaboration of all of their NBA beat writers, all 30 of them. What they did was they spent the time period from March 16th until April 1st, about 2 weeks, polling NBA players in an anonymous survey. Right, anonymous survey, so you don't have to put your name on it. So the hope is that you will be more honest so they can get the best possible results. And they asked him a variety of questions, which we're going to break down in just a minute. 127 players responded to these questions with answers. Now, some guys didn't answer everything. You get it. Some may have just answered two. Some may have answered all the questions. But you had 127 guys responding, which is more than 25% of the NBA. So this is a pretty good sample size.
Pretty
right
comprehensive.
Here. Yeah, it's pretty, pretty, pretty good, as the great Larry David would say. Now, there are a variety of categories I want to break down because they pertain directly to the Warriors and the future of the NBA. But I want to start with this. Who's the most overrated player? They got 47 votes on this. The most overrated player in the NBA. It's a tie between Russell Westbrook, who won the MVP a couple seasons ago, and Draymond Green. Now, what am I supposed to make of this? Because at first I see this and I think to myself, Draymond wasn't even an all-star this year. So how's he overrated? How overrated can you be if you're not even an all-star? He's tied with Russ, so there are a bunch of ways to slice this. How much truth do you give this? Actually, let me pull it back one step further. The way this is conducted in general, an anonymous poll, do you like that? Do you feel it's going to be more accurate? Do you feel we're dealing with a good representation, a good, honest assessment
yes,
to help
Joe,
people feel?
Absolutely. Okay. It's a great representation, and I think it would be great if it was 100% of the league. That way you could get a full sense for what the league was thinking. I've coached many, many teams at multiple levels. When I coach high school teams, I have the kids vote on the three major awards, most improved, most valuable, and usually some sort of coach's award you lay
best
out
coach.
The criteria.
Best coach?
No, it's usually the only coach, so you don't have to hold that one.
No assistant?
By and large, though, when I hold these votes, the people that they select are usually the ones who should win, in my opinion, which tells me
but
that...
is it done anonymously?
It's done anonymously.
Okay.
It's done completely anonymously, and I have found that through anonymous polling like this, usually the players in this sense know exactly what's going on.
Coz, do you see it the same way?
You know, it's interesting because the players have put together their own awards at the end of the season. We in the media give awards out. Here's your MVP. Here's your this. Here's your that. But the players decided we're going to do our own. they do vote on their own, and I don't know exactly the process they do it, if they put their name to it, or if it's an anonymous thing. I think this is fine. I talked to Sam just the other night at a Kings game back in Sacramento, and he was talking about putting this poll together and how tricky it is because there aren't names to it, and some guys do decide to tell you what they think. So there are some guys who went on the record and said some things. So I think it's fair because I think the people who are involved – they decided, I'm going to give you my fair assessment, so I think it's a fair poll.
Okay, now do we like these questions being answered more by players or media members? By and large, it's generally the opinion of the media or anyone but the players who's talking about stuff like this. You go to TV to find out who's most overrated. This is the players. So do you put more weight on that?
Absolutely.
You like
especially
that?
As it pertains to overrated, because the people who generally, quote, rate these players are the media. So for the media to say who's the most overrated, it becomes more of a critique of their own coverage of the players. So if the players say who's most overrated, I think they're reacting to the hype created by the fans and the media. So in this one category, it's even more interesting to me because it's the players looking at the perception of other players and judging overrated as accordingly.
Hey, jealousy. That's what it's all about.
Gin blossoms.
Exactly. I think that's what you're looking at on overrated. I think the voting goes with jealousy. I think Russ West drops a 20-21-20 night and averages a triple-double for the third straight year. I think there are some players who are jealous.
See, I think the players see that as an empty hallmark that is trumpeted by the media. Oh, 20-20-20 game.
Then go do it.
Jim, you look at the way he acquires and accrues his triple-doubles. A lot of it is through defensive incapability by his teammates or rebounds that just fall to him because they know that he wants to get his triple-double. And I think the media trumpets that up. And so Russell Westbrook, I think, is victimized accordingly because the media, oh, he's averaging a triple-double. The players know that he's not the best player in the league, that largely their construct makes it so he gets more rebounds, he gets more assists.
And do you remember when Draymond Green was the best story in the NBA? Second-round pick. Is he going to be an all-star? His mom is the one who gives him the message. He's a first-time all-star. He was all smiles and happy, and everyone loved him. Then he showed up at All-Star Weekend. Was that in Toronto, I think? And he had a stylist. Remember, he had some funky outfit for the game before and the night before and then the day of, and he became a different guy. And then in the playoffs to Oklahoma City, when he went from tough guy, great defensive player Draymond Green, to fake tough guy, when he's kicking Steven Adams in the junk twice. I think his image turned then, and I think guys in the NBA realized he's tough, but he's a little bit of fake tough guy.
But does that make you overrated, or is this just their way of getting back at him by voting him in a category that would probably be the most demeaning of all of them that are out there? Because everything else they're talking about, they do a vote on who's the greatest of all time. LeBron, Michael, Kareem, all that stuff. And then you've got who should be the MVP and a bunch of other. Where's Kevin Durant going to go? We'll get to that. That's an interesting response. But most overrated, what's so overrated about him? He didn't go to the All-Star game. It's not as if people are out there consistently trumpeting he's one of the most underrated players or one of the most deserving players of anything. He's on a team where, by and large, he might get the third look in terms of, hey, how important are you? Because we know where the first two looks are going, and then it really comes down to you versus Clay. And that always varies based on who's playing, who's got the hotter hand at the moment.
Right.
If Clay's slumping, Draymond's more valuable. If Draymond's struggling a little bit and not putting up anything in the box scores, Clay's deemed more valuable.
I think there's also a sense that he might be a system piece, that if he was the lead dog for a team or if he was the second best player on another team, that he wouldn't be doing the things he's able to do because he's got such a vaunted score in KD and two of the best shooters of all time in Steph and Clay. He's able to attack with abandon and be able to pitch it out. If he was on a team without as much shooting and he had to rely on his own offensive skill set to really eat, he wouldn't be an all-star.
Would that be his fault, though? If you're a team that's paying him to be a scorer, isn't that more on you? Isn't that square peg round hole? If Draymond doesn't get re-upped by the Warriors and he goes elsewhere, someone gives him a monster deal, and you're expecting him to give you 25 a night, didn't you completely misevaluate
yes,
the situation?
You're absolutely right. No, you're dead on that one. I don't think there's a team out there who sees him as a 25 point a game guy.
Even 20, you wouldn't.
Right.
15, I think, would be the top end.
He fills up the entire stat line. He does all the dirty work. He plays hard every night. That's it. But I think guys in the league say a lot of that is some fake hustle. Some of that's fake hustle. I'm barking too much. Maybe he gets a little bit more too much attention for how little he actually does bring and affect the game.
And he gets more attention because he's on this team. And that's kind of my point about Draymond Green, if he was on Memphis or if he was on Minnesota, I don't think that he would be an all-star, and I don't think that he would be getting the same level of run that he gets being a part of a championship team.
You know what? If he, another guy on this list a little further down, if he's on Minnesota or Memphis or Orlando, he's Jimmy Butler.
Those, by the way, three Minnesota guys tied for second. It was Butler, Wiggins, and Carl Anthony Towns.
Now, you want to talk about getting it accurate? Wow. That, you got it right. Andrew Wiggins is as overrated as they come. Carl Anthony Towns, soft numbers. He's soft serve ice cream. He will go out there and put up big numbers as you lose a bunch of games down the stretch and don't win anything. He is a great beta. He is a great beta to have on your team. He's your number two option who could put up all the numbers. But if you need a killer late, if you need a guy that's going to lead the team into uncharted territory, he is not your guy. Wiggins is most definitely not your guy. Let it marinate for a sec because I want to come back to this. We'll open it up to the phones as well. 888-957-9570. 888-957-9570. Draymond Green, really? Really? Is he that overrated or are we being homers in our defense of him? That is brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full service banking, no compromises.
Joe Lowendibs continues on 95.7 The Game.
No matter how you want to slice it, Sam Amick's article working with 30 NBA beat writers up on The Athletic now, an anonymous poll. You took 127 NBA players over the course of 2 weeks, asked them a variety of questions, and then published the results. There's some fascinating stuff up there. For example, who should win the MVP? The players voted James Harden. 44% of the vote went to James Harden. Giannis got 39% of the vote. This is where it gets very interesting for me. Harden, 44% of the vote for MVP from the players. Giannis, 39%. All right, you see Harden as the MVP. It's a good race this year. Personally, I'm in the Giannis camp, but I can see the case for Harden. It's not something you walk to the edge of the cliff, scream, and then jump off because you don't get your way. This is a very good MVP battle. But you're telling me Harden's going to get 44% of the MVP vote to Giannis' 39%. Then you're going to ask everyone, if you're building a franchise today, who's the first player you would draft? Oh, Giannis, 36%. Harden comes in at 15th. 15th. So 44% of the guys responding to this vote are telling you that Harden's the MVP, but he ranks 15th in terms of players. These same guys would build a franchise around if they were starting today. First pick.
Is that age?
He's 29.
Or is that style of play? Maybe they really respect. First of all, what jumps out to me on the MVP side is the league loves James Harden. Players really respect him as a player. Remember when Steph was winning MVPs, the player vote, when they had their own player awards, went to James Harden. Didn't go to Steph Curry. Players seem to really respect the beard, which I found to be the most interesting thing of all this. And when it comes to starting your roster,
why is that? Why do you think that is?
I'm trying to figure it out because it surprises me a little bit.
Is it the prolific scoring? Is scoring the end-all, be-all category in the NBA to the point where if you can do that better than anyone, you are viewed as the best? Does the idea of the Russell Westbrook triple-double not matter to the extent of dropping 50 on consecutive nights?
I think the idea of scorer versus shooter is something that you just hit on maybe accidentally because Harden is more of a scorer in their eyes, and Steph is more of a shooter. And I think also the fact that Steph won the MVP, two MVPs, shooting the way he did, and then James Harden kind of followed after him with three-point proficiency and also the ability to get to the foul line, that maybe cleared the way for Harden to win the MVP.
If there's another player who played on Houston and played the Harden role, could they produce numbers the same way Harden is? Is he that unique, or is the system that unique? If I interchange Steph Curry for James Harden, or Kevin Durant for James Harden, pick your NBA scorer for James Harden, would they be putting up 36 a game?
It'd probably be close.
You think so?
The Steph question's interesting because he tends to get his in a more specific way. Harden's a little bit more diverse. He'll hit you from the three, but he gets to the free throw line quite a bit as well. He can have brutal shooting nights and still go for 30 because he gets 25 looks from the stripe. Durant's the interesting one because we were arguing this earlier in the year, Coz. The idea that if Durant were to leave and you just give those extra shots to Steph and he gets as many shots a night as Harden does, how many points does he put up? Right? But again, Harden is very diverse in his ability to score. He can drive to the rack. He can get to the stripe. He can connect from deep. He's everywhere. I think that might be viewed as the ultimate weapon amongst the NBA players, which is why they like him so much, which is also kind of what surprised me. I guess because Giannis doesn't have a great deep shot is why he doesn't get it.
And I think,
dude's such a freak, though. You would figure... Mm-hmm.
He's unbelievably freaky. The way Kevin Durant plays, his ability to do it off the bounce, I think would fit better with Houston. Because James Harden, you don't see him working off the ball like Steph does and getting catch and shoot threes. He has the ball in his hands. He uses the screen roll or the step back daddy, or he gets to the rim. I don't think Steph Curry really fits in the way Houston does it, the way he's so ball dominant. What his usage is about 40% for the Houston Rockets. Steph works so much off the ball that I don't think that he would be the fit to go over to Houston.
Harden's cultural now, too, by the way. You watch that game last night, see how many kids are taking step back threes? It's just a thing now. Everyone just takes a step back three.
Yep.
It's cultural. Now that it's in the NCAA and you're seeing it everywhere, he's got the step back daddy with the extra travel step. But last night, the step back is the way to shoot your three now.
It is. It's a way to separate yourself, but it's not an easy shot to take and make. That's what these kids are going to mostly learn. They're doing it at the college level. Try the NBA three. Much different animal. Much different animal. But I just...
It's a handful of inches.
Go ahead. Let's go out to the floor right now. We'll shoot a college
one. Don't get me started.
We'll shoot an NBA one.
Someone tried this before. Okay. I knocked down 7 of 10 free throws. I'll do it again.
I didn't ask you about free throws.
I'll shoot the lights out, Coz.
I will do the same. I'll go to the line with you. I'll do it right now. I'll go to the line right now.
How many could you knock down right now?
I hit 110 in a row.
What?
I hit 110
in a row. Are you talking about free throws?
Yeah.
What?
Actual free throws, not on a little tyke hoop.
Nope. Actual 110 free throws in a row.
Do you believe this?
What? Jerry Lewis telethon. I was a junior in high school. Hit 110 in a row. My teammate hit 60. I went and I was after him. I hit 110 in a row. True story.
I'm just waiting for the other shoe to drop.
I am too. Lewis telethon had my head spinning.
110 in a row?
Yeah. 110 in a row. In
fact, when I got legitimate hoop, legitimate ball.
Yeah. And we did it at the Jerry Lewis telethon when it used to be a thing on Labor Day weekend. Yeah, we were at Oakland Mall in Troy, Michigan. I had 110 free throws
in a row. I may have to Google this if there's any possible VHS or Betamax footage.
The guy who hit 60 or 61, he then, as I was getting in the 50s, he starts rebounding. And usually you're in a rhythm, right?
Yeah.
So you'd get the ball, you'd bounce it right back. I had my one dribble line shoot. So he starts rebounding and, like, throwing it off to the side to me to get me off the line. And then in the end, he's, like, spinning the ball to me and trying to throw me off. And I swear, like, my tying free throw, I mean, it hit the front of the rim, and I had to blow air into the wind to get that thing to fall into the rim. He was throwing me off my shot. Then I just was back in rhythm. 110 in a row.
He's telling the story with quite a bit of confidence, but I can't get myself to believe it.
And I'm
so
looking
incredible.
At you like you're waiting to see what card's going to come on the river and whether or not he's bluffing with a pair of pocket passes or not.
I'm going to call.
I passed up college scholarships to play basketball. I gave them up. I went to school. I decided to go to school. Like, no one realized
you could have gone to school and played basketball, too. You decided you just wanted to focus on school.
Yeah, there were smaller schools.
Where'd you go to college?
I went to Michigan State.
Michigan State.
Yeah.
Where could you have gone and played?
I could have played at just smaller schools.
Kissimmee Tech?
University of Wisconsin, like Stevens Point, which is where, used to play for the Portland Trailblazers went.
Terry Porter.
Terry Porter went there.
Terry Porter.
I could have played at those types of schools. I could have played there.
That's impressive.
That's okay. But no one realizes because I'm 5'8", 160, soaking wet.
Yeah.
But
you were a three-star recruit before they went to five stars. It was so long ago.
I'm a scrapper. You know.
It's the guy's name, Jimmy Chitwood.
Jimmy Chitwood.
Yeah.
Right. Don't get caught watching the paint
dry. I don't know about this. Some
right,
smells.
But 110.
110 is incredible. You know what? Steph's record for free throws in a row. Has he ever gone on record and said how many he's knocked down in a row from the stripe?
I'd have to check his numbers. I don't know in practice if he's ever beaten Jim Cosimo.
Not 110.
But not only did I like not go to college and play, I quit playing. Like, I didn't touch a ball for 20 years.
I refuse to run. I choose not to run.
Exactly.
As Jerry Seinfeld says.
Exactly.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I quit playing. And the last time I played was like 4 or 5 years ago. I played one night, and that was it. I gave up.
How'd it go?
I hit the game-winning shot in the very last game.
All right, this is
it's true.
See now,
hey, my buddy, my buddy LeBrian Shields. I was playing out in Alamo or Danville. Last game winner.
From where? From what range?
It was like a 17-footer right wing.
Nice little mid-range jumper.
I was dead. Yeah, that's all I got. That's all I got.
Do you believe? Where are you at on this right now,
man? On a scale of 1, which this is the biggest tall tale I've ever heard, and 10, this is the God's honest truth. I got to tell you, I am stuck in the middle right now. I'm at a five.
Where are you at on this?
I believe it. I don't think you lied.
Atta girl.
I believe you.
Atta girl. And you know.
And you, Joe.
I'm not as nice as you thought I was.
Oh, I know.
The
that's
number
why.
Is I'm not so as good outrageous. A guy.
It is, isn't it?
If you were, I'm inclined to believe that if you were lying, you'd probably go less.
Exactly.
Like you'd be like, I hit 96 straight once. It's like, all right. No. 110 is just such a, that's such a, it's a very, it's 2-7 offsuit with all your chips in the middle.
It is.
Pre-flop.
It
just
is.
Assuming
what,
you're going to get me out of there
yep.
like Matt Damon versus Johnny Chan.
888-957-9570 is Jim Coe's Immoral Baller.
Chilton Auto Body text line, 95795. Are you buying this story? Just a simple yes or no.
That's all.
And then commentary. All right. I want to get back to the anonymous NBA vote. The Draymond Green overrated thing. We got to put that to bed, and we're going to do that. But I also want to talk about what the players voted in terms of where they see Kevin Durant playing next year. Fascinating result. Joe, Steph, and Dan Dibley here on 95.7 The Game.
The Western Conference playoffs run through Oracle.
If you're going to win the West, you've got to go all the way West. You've got to go to the Bay.
Listen to every dunk.
Dunks it down!
Every three.
Splash!
Every moment.
The one-time darlings are now a dynasty.
It all starts this weekend on the exclusive home of Warriors playoff basketball. 95.7. The Game.
Joe Lowendibs continues on 95.7 The Game.
All right, so where are we at on this? We got a lot of curveballs coming your way. Joe, Jim Cozumore, Dan Dibley, 95.7 The Game. First and foremost, do you believe Coz, when he was younger, hit 110 consecutive free throws in a Jerry Lewis telethon? Lots of dissect there.
At the Oakland Mall in Troy, Michigan.
Shout out Oakland, Michigan, Oakland yeah. University.
Oakland University, which is in kind of Auburn Hills-ish.
Yeah. Which I'm sure you could have played for Oakland University, although they're D1.
At the time, maybe. My sister graduated from Oakland University.
Of course she did.
See, because the story's all coming back around.
It's incredible.
Like, if I'm lying, like, if this is one of those games where you got to figure out if I'm telling the truth or lying, I'm doing a pretty good job of lying.
Are you familiar with a guy by the name of Skip Bayless? He's done a little bit of TV work. He reportedly was some sort of highfalutin, high caliber, high cotton college basketball player,
yes.
or high school basketball player.
Yes.
Turned out he got nothing but garbage time scraps.
He got called out.
He did.
Was getting like 2 minutes, I think, a game.
Jeez.
He was not the player that he was like, yeah, I could have played, and I was getting like 22 a game or
yeah.
something. Yeah. No.
Do we call you Skip Cozumore?
You can try.
Okay. I'm trying to vet this, Joe, and so far I haven't found anything.
I got my own problems with the 415 on the Chilled Auto Body text line. True story. I believe that more than Joe hitting 7 of 10 free throws. All right, troll. I had so many witnesses there that day. Who would lie about hitting 7 of 10 free throws? It's the most mundane of all accomplishments one could ever possibly aspire to.
It's a C average.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's exactly what it is. Yeah.
Wow, way to bring him down.
Sorry.
I would say 7 of 10 is pretty impressive.
It's very impressive.
I don't care what the average is. I said I was going to do it, and then I walked out onto a court. I hadn't shot a ball in like 5 years, no warm-up, and I knocked down 7 of 10. And then I walked off, and then we walked back
that's
on and we
cool.
played like some 3-on-3. I ran out of gas early. The game takes a lot of energy.
The only thing a 7th-grade girl can do, and I don't mean that this – I mean this is a compliment. It's the only thing
doesn't
a 7th,
sound like it.
7th-grade girl can do that a paid professional – can't do as well in the world of sports. It's the only thing on the planet. You can shoot free throws better than a paid professional. I know 7th-grade girls who can, so the end.
Oh, you're talking about like the DeAndre Jordans of the world and the Shaqs. Like
you name it.
Individuals who can go out and knock down more free throws.
All-stars. There are 7th-grade girls shooting free throws better than all-stars. That's pretty impressive.
That's a good point.
I believe it.
We
yep.
got to this because the league, there's this great article on The Athletic right now. Sam Amick, 30 NBA beat writers, taking an anonymous poll of about 127 NBA players, which is more than 25% of the league. They asked them a variety of questions. The one we focused on right out of the gate was the who is the most overrated player in the NBA? And there was a tie for first, Russell Westbrook and Draymond Green. I'm going to tell you what, maybe the most disliked, maybe if this were a high school slam book, he could be the most disliked, most hated, most uncooperative, some stupid superlative like that. But most overrated, that I still can't wrap my head around that. And I don't feel like there's a lot of bias. He didn't go to the All-Star game this year. He's never been voted an MVP. He has, but this vote took place this year. He's not an All-Star this year. So right out of the gate, you're telling me you think he's overrated. Well, he's not listed as an NBA All-Star. That's number one. Number two, if the day comes where he leaves the Warriors, he's going to go somewhere. He's going to make people regret votes like this because he's the guy who comes in that to put the team over the top. That's what he is. There's going to be a team like a Philadelphia.
Detroit Pistons.
Or one of these young teams. Maybe it's Phoenix. Maybe they get it together. They get a big pick here. They get it together. Maybe it's someone like the Knicks. And by the time they're ready to win, he comes in with championship experience. And he comes in and he's the rare star who's not going to look for 30 shots a night. He doesn't need 20 shots. He's going to come in. He's going to rebound. He's going to pass. He's going to play defense. He's going to quarterback the defense. He's going to help lead in the locker room. He's going to be Mark Messier coming to the Rangers at the end of his career to put you over the top. And then everyone's going to go, damn, this guy's pretty valuable. Value can be demonstrated in a variety of ways. You don't need to score 30 a night to be proven as valuable. That's one way to be valuable. I just don't see how he's an overrated basketball player.
Maybe
I really
guys,
don't see that.
Guys in the league don't think he's as good a defender as maybe the rest of us do, or as good a ball handler, or distributor, or as team guy. Maybe their definition isn't just about points and what numbers you're going to put up. It's the totality. As much as we tend to, I think, enjoy and trumpet the totality of his game, maybe guys in the league think it's fake hustle.
I think also when you look at the trash talker list, which Sam Amick also did a poll on the biggest trash talkers in the NBA, you'll find that those players are also listed on the most overrated. So when you have other players seeing guys who talk trash,
there you go. That makes sense.
And then you're asked about somebody who's overrated, you're going to think about somebody who bumps their gums. Because as much trash as Draymond Green talks, and I know Russell Westbrook is on both lists as well, if you don't go out there and give me 35 and 17, you may come across as being overrated. If you're getting to me with your trash talk,
yeah, I see that. I know I can understand where you're going with that one as well. But I'm really hoping that the Oklahoma City Thunder play the Warriors in the first round. I like these two guys with this overrated knock in the same series in the first playoff series going at it. And chirping.
I'd love to see that. Also have the MVP list with Paul George, who was in there, and Kevin Durant. Steph Curry not getting as many votes as maybe he should have. So there's all kinds of angles in that series.
Why do you think that is? Is that maybe as big a story as any, that Steph Curry doesn't get enough MVP?
It doesn't surprise me at all. There's something that's going on out there about people not liking him, and I don't know what it is. I think it's the, you're too perfect, I can't relate to you, therefore I don't like you. I'm not saying that's how I feel. I think he's the perfect model citizen for what you would want your kids to watch with professional sports. Look at how this guy does it. Look at how he goes about his business. Look at how he's dealt with adversity. This is how you should try to conduct yourself. This guy sets a good example. But I think by and large, there are people that look at him and they think, all right, your dad played in the NBA, so you had an easier route, which, not saying that's true, but I think there's some people
perception,
that look at
right?
that. Then there are some people that look at the fact that his game is a three-point game and maybe he's a, I don't want to say a gimmick, but he it consistently feels as if he does not get the credit that someone who's achieved what he's achieved would get. It feels like if this were happening, if Harden was on the same path, had won just as many titles, just as many MVPs, it feels as if we'd be talking about James Harden as one of the all-time greats. I'm not saying we need to talk about Steph as one of the all-time greats, but he never gets any of these votes. It never, the season starts, he's having a great year. Well, you know, KD's there. Well, yeah, that's true. KD doesn't seem to get any of these votes either, to be honest with you.
Right.
But for some reason, there's always this, there's something about how he is perceived amongst the rest of the guys in the league. I think he makes guys look bad. I think there are a lot of guys like Harden who love the strip clubs, a lot of guys who are living the dream, and then there's Steph, who is religious. He's married. He's a family man.
He's had the same girlfriend since middle school. When do they meet?
Like his entire story is just this buttoned up story where you can't find a flaw. And I think people hate that. I think people hate that because it makes them feel bad about themselves and their misgivings.
And maybe they can't relate to him as a result. And it all plays into that sort of hater mentality, quote unquote, whether it's you think that Draymond's overrated because he talks too much trash, or you don't give Steph MVP consideration because he had the, quote, easy route, having a dad who was one of the great knockdown shooters of all time. And
I
additionally,
loved his flick. God, could he shoot the
part
ball?
Of yeah. Part of the super team mentality, Jim. If you're part of this super team, maybe you don't stand out as much as being individually an MVP.
Wasn't that what we do in society? Don't we cut down those that go to the top?
Yeah,
I'm not saying everybody, but isn't there a? I mean, you see it just about anywhere. and I'm not going to use any specific examples, but I can think of one. I can think of one here from maybe a year or so ago. Someone in the industry has a taste of success. And the next thing that happens is a bunch of fake congratulations and then a bunch of trash talk behind the back about why you didn't deserve the job. I remember being involved in the conversation about a year ago, just listening to how people will tear each other down. People will always look for the opportunity to talk about why you don't deserve what you got rather than why, hey, it's awesome that that worked out. And I'm not saying it happens everywhere, but we seem to have that. We seem to have that in a variety of industries.
In our industry.
Yeah. Our industry, I think it happens in pro sports. But if someone does well in this, to their face, you'll shake their hand. And then the second you turn your back, it's here's the reason why you didn't deserve that. Here's the reason why that shouldn't be happening.
Or this is why he or she got that. Had nothing to do with their ability, their talent, the fact that they've worked at it for 15, 20 years. We've got another excuse for it. Yeah, this is a tough business.
It happens with women in sports more than anywhere else. The second a woman gets a promotion, the first thought process that comes out is, who did she sleep with to get that job? There's literally, I cannot tell you how many times you come across that, where you're just you're on this beat for years, then you end up on a sideline, and the thought is, oh, you got that job because you're pretty. Look at what happened in the 10 years leading up to that job. How do you not look at the resume? Covering high school sports, working a terrible beat at awful hours for no pay till you got this job. People don't just randomly show up on the sidelines of NFL games as their first overall gig. Rookies don't get those jobs. Those are seasoned veterans who have paid dues, who have done really awful gigs to have to get there. Because that's where just about everyone starts.
Unless you're a dimple-faced former journeyman quarterback with the Dallas Cowboys, then you walk right into the most prime
spot in America.
And you crush
it. How dare you, sir?
Yeah.
Masters Week, no less, to say something like that.
Sorry about that.
And I thought
Still the only guy in America upset about Tony Romo.
Not upset, but you were laying out a case that you don't just walk into those jobs, and I was counterpointing you with the dimpled one, Antonio Romo.
Has he not acquitted himself?
Did he not walk into a gig as a rookie?
With all of that knowledge behind him, he was the most ready person
for that job. And he's been great. People love him. And he's going to make $10 million a year.
Everybody loves him.
I'm simply pointing
out. He's America's sweetheart.
The fallacy in your argument, it fell short. You got to the 5-yard line and you coughed it up and I had to scoop and score.
But then you see counterly, you have somebody like Jason Witten who couldn't do what he did at the same level.
Oh, boy.
I'll say.
Nice timing on that one.
Look at Anna flying in.
Well, I mean, you've seen it. As a woman in sports, there's virtually, and this isn't everyone, but any type of promotion you may get, there's going to be a natural thought process as to how you got there. It is extraordinarily unfair. Unfortunately, it's the world in which we live.
100%.
But it's the cattiness that comes from being in the media. And it's not the only industry that's like that. But, I mean, if you want to speak to it, feel free to speak to it.
Oh, yeah. You know how many times I'd be sitting with somebody watching games like, all right, who'd she – I mean, people say it in front of me all the time, and I'm in this industry. It's like, why?
Well, they do because they think you would know. That's why they're saying it in front of you. They figure there's got to be a woman connection here, right? You know the real reason why she got this job.
Yeah, and everybody always says it's like, no, maybe she actually worked her way up there. Come on now.
No one ends up doing sidelines of Monday Night Football just because that was the first gig. I thought maybe I'd get into this business. I just wanted to apply. Hey, Monday night in New England. How does that sound? Would you like to start there? 7 figures, too, by the way. We're just handing these jobs out like freaking candy corn on Halloween. You are listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1, KGMZ San Francisco, a radio.com sports station. Good morning and welcome to your 7 o'clock hour of Joe, Jim Cozumore, and Dibs here on 95.7 The Game. Low on vacation. He will be back soon. But we are talking about a great article on The Athletic today. Sam Amick quarterbacked it, but it was 30 NBA beat writers who spent 2 weeks from the middle of March to the beginning of April interviewing anonymously 127 NBA players, asking them questions like who should win the MVP, asking them questions like who is the most overrated player. Hint, it was a tie between Russell Westbrook and Draymond Green. We want your calls on all of this, but here's another question we haven't touched on yet. Question number 15, 109 votes out of 127 players polled. Where will Kevin Durant be playing next season? Choice number one, 64%. The New York Knicks.
Ooh.
Choice number two, 20%, the Golden State Warriors.
Ooh.
Choice number three, 4.5%, which means at least 5 guys voted for this, the Brooklyn Nets.
Wow.
They've got 2 max spots. All right, Tibbs. Fine. What do you make of that? Now, if the players anonymously are saying this, Lowe says this all the time, and if he was here, we'd ask him. Players talk. Players talk amongst themselves. They might know this stuff well in advance because they have conversations with one another. They're friends. They text. Word gets out. They won't out their boys, right? They know it's his business, but amongst themselves, it is a fraternity. A lot of these guys are very connected going way back. So it's one thing for Rick Bucher. It's another thing for Stephen A. Smith or Skip Bayless. Now we've got the players, 63% out of 109 votes saying they've got Durant going to the Knicks.
I think that if Kevin Durant has made his decision and let it be known, then that poll all of a sudden has a lot more pertinence. But I don't think that he's even made up his mind. And he hasn't indicated publicly either way that he's decided on his future. So for me, if it still is out there as a possibility that he stays or a possibility that he goes, then this poll is nothing but conjecture. If he's made his decision, then he's going to New York.
I'm sorry, Dibs. I'm going to just take a look at the track record of your association, as you like to call it. All we have to do is go back 1 year. It was a wide-open secret that one LeBron James was going to sign with the Los Angeles Lakers. It's not something he said, but if you were to take a blind poll last year, it was an open secret. He was going to end his Cavaliers tenure after last year and land with the Lakers. Guys in the association knew it. This is that version this year. The league knows where Kevin Durant's going because he has made it an open secret.
It's erroneous because you're talking about...
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.